Welcome to the Life 2.0 podcast. I'm John St. Augustine. Time to get at it one more time, up the down staircase in the outdoor, make sense out of the senseless, if at all possible, and find the obvious buried in the absurd. Let's get to it. Welcome back to the show. Glad to have you with me one more time. It's been a little bit of a hiatus for me. The last episode of this podcast was back on Halloween, and I appreciate all the comments I got. You know, I kind of relived my younger days as my dad running around the house most of September and all of October as Dracula, a.k.a. Christopher Lee, a.k.a. Bela Lugosi. So I got a lot of great comments on that. It was a great time. You know, it was a simple time, and part of the reason I'm sure that it was a simpler time is because my focus was so narrow. I'm 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 years old. I'm not paying attention to the headlines very much. It was all about the lifelines back then. And that's a secret, I think, to maintaining our sanity in a world that seems to be going insane more and more by the day. So, you know, I always try to say that it's important to be informed, but not overloaded. It's good to have information, but you can't let it lead to degradation of your mindset, because if it does, you're toast. And the world in so many ways is not much different than it's ever been when there's been more than four or five humans on the planet. It's been chaos, and we seem to thrive on that stuff for some particular reason that I am not sure of. And interestingly enough, let me just say this. Part of the reason I've been on this hiatus, and it's a loose term because I always try to knock out 4 to 6 of these a month or so, is that I've been doing this radio show that has me broadcasting internationally from Chicago. I have a co-host on a show called The Bridge in Beijing, China. I have two rotating co-hosts there. And it's such an incredible experiment in human behavior. Let's put it that way. The show started out on September 1st. We're well past 85 episodes ready. This is a daily show, Monday through Friday. I am with a young woman named Hu Young, who is educated in the United Kingdom. She spent time in the United States as a exchange student when she was younger, and she is now one of the top radio voices in Beijing, China. And on the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, I am with Bebe. And Bebe used to be one of the biggest names in radio in Beijing, retired, got married, has a little daughter. And so they kind of asked her if she would join me. And the interesting behavioral part of this, as I mentioned, is that I've never met these people prior to September 1st, loosely. I mean, we had a couple of online chats and stuff like that, but it's very different when you're working with someone. And I am so impressed with their professionalism and their preparedness. Sometimes they're a little bit more prepared for the show than I am. But Hu Young still does a regular daily talk show. She has all the production elements to have to go into that. And then she gets up very early the next morning, because we're 14 hours apart, to do the show with me. So I'm here from 7 to 9 o'clock most nights doing a show with someone who's, you know, a day and a half or so away from me, 14 hours basically. And to reconnect like that is just incredible. We don't use Zoom. We don't see each other. And so we've learned this cadence. And I think you have to be a serious radio professional and a really good broadcaster, an outstanding broadcaster, actually, to be able to pull that off on the other end. I've been doing this two decades plus, so some of this is third and fourth nature to me. I went past second nature a long time ago. This stuff's like in my blood. So I handle a lot of the technical stuff here. I produce all the shows. I do all the editing on the shows. I create the shows. And then I host with Hu Young and Bebe. And the conversations over the last 90 days have been just incredible and outstanding to me. We have guests from all over the world. We had a guy on from the UK. We've had people that have been in Beijing. We've had people in Chicago. We had callers from Texas. And what it says to me is that when you push all the bullshit and the bias aside and you connect with people, we're all just pretty much the same. You may not want to hear that, but it's the truth. And that we mostly laugh about the same things and cry about the same things and get upset about the same things and enjoy the same things. We just look a little different. But that takes, I guess it's a spiritual maturity that you have to have in order to be able to see those things. There's a lot of people that are underneath that radar and at a very much less effective level that are still focused on the differences as opposed to the commonalities that we have. And that's tough stuff to overcome. But I'm always reminding myself that we're the new kids on the block when, in terms of the planet and every species on it, of which we are one, I think, for the most part. You know, we've only been around about 1 million years. If you go back about 150 to 200,000 years ago, where, you know, we're starting to form our societies and things are starting to come together and we're starting to realize there's more than just us on the planet and all the technological advances that have taken place, which have pushed us closer and closer together. I guess in some ways, I'm glad we're doing as well as we are. It could be a lot worse. It's been a lot worse back in the day. You know, we don't do some of the things we used to do to each other. We find other ways to do it. I will grant you that. But it's all about perspective for me. And I said yes to this show right off the bat because I found it in my wheelhouse for a mandate that I have to do what I can, where I am, with what I have and what I've been given to bring people together. There is more than enough in the world that pushes us apart. So we did a little radio focus study. Some of the suits in radio got together and called a bunch of people and asked them a bunch of questions about The Bridge, the show that we designed, and how they're reacting to it. And the number one thing that everybody said, according to the research, is that it's so refreshing to hear people just have conversation that's apolitical, number one, and that the goodwill that comes out of these conversations is important. And so that's why I've always maintained that the lifelines are more important than the headlines. The headlines come and go. Did you ever notice that? You should, if you haven't. About every 12 to 15 seconds, there's always something new gnawing on your backside. That stuff comes and goes. One day it's here, it's gone in hours. And so the roller coaster, in my opinion, that we ride of our emotions, because it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this, that'll wear your ass out. The lifelines, however, having long-form conversation that's on some level of intelligence that's above, you know, a certain swamp-level mentality, is critical. It holds everything else together. If we just lived our lives at the headlines, man, no wonder people take Prozac and other things, because that's where you get stuck at, and it becomes an addiction almost. There's a part of us that, it's like a car accident, right? If you're driving down the road, there's a huge backup, and you wonder, you know, what's going on up there. And even though you slow by, you turn your head to look, mostly just to make sure that you're not involved in it, right? Or nobody you know. But that's that gaper's block that we call it, and that we're gaping and looking at things that are really difficult, terrible, and sometimes deadly. And then we're off to the races one more time. Well, life is like that a lot. These headlines cause gaper's blocks. They get in the way of living our lives in a way that is meaningful and has purpose to it. And I think if we lose that element of our lives, either one of those elements, purpose and perspective, you might as well get the forks out and stick it in because we're done. And I refuse to do that. You know, I've been in the media, as I mentioned, over 20 years, and I've been in newsrooms and, you know, been on the air with guys that make a living, a great living, talking about things that are mostly negative. I've had conversations with friends of mine who are in the business, and I'm like, how can you do this all the time? And they always say the same thing. Those zeros make up for a lot. Well, more power to them. I couldn't do it. I've actually turned down two or three opportunities to do that on both sides of the fence, which I find so interesting. I've turned down mid-six-figure jobs in radio. Number one is because I wouldn't be able to sleep at night, because you're just conjuring up one half of the coin. You know, it takes both sides plus that slice in the middle where I'm more comfortable to make that coin work. And so just to tuck one side out of my mouth, man, in the neighborhood I grew up, they'd knock you around for that. So I could never do it. But apparently there are people that can. And however they get through all that, that is up to them. I have long ago decided that I would stay in the middle part of that coin. It's like having a fence and climbing to the top and looking at both sides going, huh, there's two sides to everything. My grandfather used to say, the great Carl Gustav Bengtsson, who I'm going to talk about here in just a few minutes, he used to say there's three sides to everything. No matter how thin you slice that Longhorn cheese to put it on the limpa bread, there's always three sides, not two. There's the left side, the right side, and that thin little piece in the middle that holds it together. And so that's where I'm most comfortable, because there's value here and there's value there. And to totally predict that only one side of that piece of cheese is better than the other makes no sense to me. And so this show today was not planned. Like I said, I've been kind of running quite a bit with that other thing that I've been doing, and I was ready to kind of take a little bit of time off. But I have to tell you, this theme today, this Sunday episode of the Life 2.0 podcast comes from a note that I got from a guy who was a longtime subscriber of the show, and Jeff Monroe, Belding School together, grammar school. He's a bit older than me, but the Monroe family is well known at Belding, and he went to Schurz High School where I went, and he's been a lot of the bulldog bashes that we've done. And, you know, we stay in touch that way, and that's one of the great things about social media. That's the social media part of social media, not the unsocial media part of social media. So he sent me this note, and he said, hey, you wrote this a year ago, and maybe it's worthwhile sharing again. And I know that he was talking specifically about just posting it on Facebook. And when I read it, I thought, well, let's fire up the microphone, because it does two things. One is it kind of brings this message out to people listening in a different format than just, you know, in the written word. And number two, I don't remember writing it. I mean, I write so much, and I've written so many things that there's no way possible I could remember all this stuff. But he did, and it pops up in something like the Facebook memories or something, like a year ago this happened. And so he sent this to me, and I was busy this morning doing other things, and I looked at it, yeah, okay. And then I stopped, dropped, and rolled back into it, and I said, yeah, let me just spend a little time with this. So I wrote this actually November 22nd, 2019, and so there's been a lot of changes since this came to mind, but I will share this with you as I wrote it a year ago. And maybe you'll find value in it, maybe you won't, but that is for you to decide. My job, as always, is to deliver the mail. Whether you read it or not, I got no control over that. This was the Friday morning memo, November 22nd, 2019. It was a different time in many ways. In other ways, much the same as today. When I hear people talk about how bad things have gotten, how we treat each other, the great divide that exists, I remind them that just 56 years ago today, a sitting president was assassinated in broad daylight, and 2 days later, as live television cameras were covering his transfer from city jail to the county jail, the man who killed the president was fatally shot in the basement of the Dallas police headquarters by a Dallas nightclub operator. It might have been the first real-time murder watched on television. I was only 5 years old when JFK was shot in Dallas on November 22, 1963, and my only real memory of that time is sitting on my Grandpa Carl's knee as we watched the funeral procession and that riderless horse with boots strapped in backwards, signaling the loss of a fallen commander, reviewing his troops one last time. My grandpa cried for a very, very long time. If you think things are bad now, consider that during the campaign prior to his election, JFK dealt with anti-Catholic bigotry that surfaced since the days of the Know-Nothing Party in the mid-19th century, which promised to, quote, purify American politics of Catholics or other immigrant influences deemed to be alien. In Texas, the Baptist Convention passed a resolution, quote, cautioning members against voting for a Roman Catholic candidate, end quote. A measure echoed across a handful of other states, buoyed by the argument that a Catholic president would put loyalty to the Pope ahead of his loyalty to the United States. Just weeks after his election, a rabid anti-Catholic retired postal worker tried to assassinate JFK in Florida. Now imagine if Facebook or Twitter existed back then. Catholics would have been in the crosshairs instead of the latest fill-in-the-blank religious group or immigrant. JFK's initially tentative embrace of civil rights caused him to be hated by some in the South. When James Meredith integrated the University of Mississippi, he was escorted by 300 federal troops while more than 2,000 students protested, chanting 2-4-1-3, We Hate John Kennedy. In Georgia, a movie theater showing the film PT-109 decorated its marquee with this message, See how the Japs almost killed Kennedy. He was never fully embraced by the liberal wing of the Democratic Party, and as a result of his hard line against Khrushchev during the Cuban Missile Crisis, British Nobel Prize winner and pacifist Bertrand Russell, who once described Kennedy as much more wicked than Hitler, sent a telegram to Kennedy stating, "Your actions, desperate, no conceivable justification. We will not have mass murder. End this madness now." On the flip side of the aisle, the far right wing, John Birch Society mouthpiece American Opinion, accused Kennedy of, quote, "shameless intimidation, bribery, and blackmail, which compelled weaklings in Congress to approve treasonable acts designed to disarm us and make us the helpless prey of the affiliated criminals and savages of the United Nations." What a great group of guys, huh? President Kennedy also confronted the forerunners of the modern Patriot Group militia movement, warning that, quote, "armed bands of civilian guerrillas are more than likely to support local vigilantes than national vigilance." And days before Kennedy's assassination, thousands of flyers were distributed in downtown Dallas featuring a mugshot of Kennedy over the words, "wanted for treason." Among the charges levied by various patriots include betraying the Constitution, which he swore to uphold. He is turning sovereignty of the U.S. over to the communist-controlled United Nations. He's betraying our friends and befriending our enemies. He's given support and encouragement to the communist-inspired racial riots. He's illegally invaded sovereign states with federal troops. He's consistently appointed anti-Christians to federal office, upholds the Supreme Court in its anti-Christian rulings. Aliens and known communists abound in our federal offices. Against the backdrop of history, it is sobering to learn that the U.S. Secret Service, which protects presidents, investigated 34 threats on President Kennedy's life from the state of Texas alone. Kennedy had 1,000 days in office, and he died at the age of 46, and it was the end of Camelot, which never really existed in the first place, but the idea of it was so very powerful. So here we are, 216 years later, and little has changed. A quick study of our short history shows that beliefs handed down from generations past ensures that we'll continue to grow further and further and further apart rather than closer together. I visited my grandparents' grave a few weeks ago, and the memory of that November day was front and center. Grandpa Carl, like many millions, came to America from another country to build a life better than the one offered to them in their homeland. So for many, JFK was the very embodiment of that idea, and his assassination also pierced many hearts, like my grandfather's, and left them mortally wounded as well. My maternal grandfather, Carl Gustav Bengtsson, died in 1965 at the age of 60, which was the same age I was when I wrote this. I made a pass through each and every row of the grave markers in the small cemetery in rural Wisconsin. It was damp, it was cold, and the stones are covered in mist. And yet, once again, my experiment and observation yielded the same results that it has for the past 30 years. No political party affiliation on any stone. No Democrats, no Republicans, no independents. But what I did see is mother, father, sister, brother, son, daughter, and veteran. So as we begin to ramp up to 2020 and the rock'em sock'em political robots on both sides of the aisle begin to try to knock each other's blocks off one more time, understand that in the end, just as in the beginning, apparently politics really doesn't matter that much, at least not enough to etch it in stone. Now, I wrote that a year ago, and it was a good reminder to me during the chaos of the last 365 days since that got posted. And even I couldn't have predicted, you know, the unbelievable reality show all of this has become. I remind myself to turn the channel a lot, because if I don't do that, then I get sucked into the vortex. And if you get sucked into the vortex, again, you're toast. I don't want to be in the vortex. You know, I don't know how many days I'm going to be here. Neither do you. And I've learned over time that a lot of people get their identity from political affiliation. It's all they have. I don't agree with that. I think there's a lot more to people than just red, blue, or whatever. But that's what they do. And that's where they find they can, you know, congregate in groups and the herd mentality, and we're going to, and all that stuff. It is the constant tug of war. It's the push and pull, the up and down. It's the elevator that keeps going to the top and back down again, over and over and over again. Yet, Once you've cast your vote, that's about it. The rest is all white noise. You can scream from the top of your house at the injustice either way, either way. And some people will hear you, but in the end, just as in the beginning, like I said, we get to vote. And those votes are counted, and we move forward, and we start again. I guarantee you that they're already gearing up for 2024. Know that. And so who gets stuck in the middle? You got the left side of the cheese and the right side of the cheese, and a lot of us get squished into the middle. And as I always say on this show, it's an unpredictable place to be because you don't know what's going to happen when people get squeezed. You squeeze oranges, you get orange juice. You squeeze tomatoes, you get tomato juice. You squeeze humans too much, and all kind of shit comes out. And then, of course, that does show up on the headlines. That is the stuff that makes the news. And it's not always good. Rarely is it good. And so as I'm sitting here doing this podcast, and I'm thinking that I will be 2 years older than my grandfather when he died, coming up shortly. You know, the things that I've seen that he didn't see, and vice versa. Incredible, really. Incredible. The technology that allows me to sit here with a computer and a microphone and do all this electronic stuff and then put it out literally to the world would blow his mind. My grandpa was a bus mechanic, worked for Greyhound for many, many years. I still have his hat hanging on the wall of my office as a reminder that he came from Sweden with nothing or very little, and he built a life out of that. And I think so much of that has value, and that's where his focus was, on building his life. And I'm reminded then, that that's where our focus should be, about building your life. The rest of it, you know, is going to come and go. I was always looking for a big takeaway in the things that I do. I don't know if there's a huge one in this little rant today, but I will tell you this, that with all that's going on, history is a great teacher. We're just really shitty students. And I am more than uncomfortable, using a good word there, at all that's going on with this pandemic. You know, my daughter is someone who is in a high-risk group. Once you hit a certain age, you become in a high-risk group. I guess on paper I could be in that group because I'm over 60, but I don't feel like it. But you know what I'm saying. So there's that. And the concept that simple things can be done differently, and yet we refuse to do them, or at least there's a portion of society that refuses to do them, is mind-boggling to me, but it's not new. 1918, 1919, the worldwide Spanish flu pandemic killed 50 million people. And all you have to do is open your computer and go back and look at the facts from that time and what people were doing. It is a mirror image of our society. We just have a lot more people, so it's more expansive, unfortunately. And we have all this social media where this stuff gets out constantly. You know, we ride that roller coaster. So it killed 50 million people. And if you go back then, they were saying the same things. I don't want to wear a mask. It's against my rights. Is that a fact? I don't want to wear a mask. It's a little hot. I'm sorry to hear that. I don't want to wear a mask. It's not in style. Do you see the masks they're coming up with now? You can go get the NFL logo ones, 3 of them for $25. So it ain't about style. But the fact is that that's about a me mentality as opposed to we the people. That's about me the person. Meaning that you're probably not putting any thought that in that if you're a carrier of this disease, of the COVID-19, Cyrus the virus, that you could be walking around without a mask because it's on your infringing on your rights. I didn't see that anywhere in the Constitution or the Bill of Rights, by the way. I don't see anywhere in either one of those documents that says you have the right not to wear a mask. Go look up Typhoid Mary and see how far that gets you. But then you're having that me mentality as opposed to we, and that might be the most vexing thing in all of this. We've always been a divided nation. I don't hold with the fact that we're more divided than ever. That would have to be back around 1863. Might want to check that out. Little thing called the Civil War. So all of these elements go in, and we're trying to figure them out all the time. And as I said, sometimes common sense isn't very common. And we're not asking you to give up your lands or your kids or your money or even any of your Second Amendment or anything like that. Just wear a mask for a while. Knock this down. It's real simple. Really simple. It's something you could do that just, it's real easy to do. I have 4, 5, 6 masks. Matter of fact, my favorite one is a Batman mask. And I figured, hey, if you got to wear a mask, be Batman. That's how I look at it. So more than a half century ago, this young president was shot in Dallas, and everything I just read to you about the many threats on his life, that's the same as it is today. We've not moved from that. And any concept or thought that the good old days were great, I'm still waiting for someone to show up and show me exactly when that was. What year was that? What date was that? And what happens is we run all this stuff through our own strainers. Well, it was great in 1968. Why? Well, because my dad was running a haunted house and he was Dracula and everybody had a good time. At the very same time, the headlines were about the riots in Chicago and the body bags coming home from Vietnam. And Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. And Robert Kennedy was assassinated. But I didn't have those things on my screen because I was focused over here on the lifelines, not the headlines. And that, to me, is the saving grace in all this. Focus on the lifelines. The headlines will come and go. The lifelines, you don't know how long you have them. It's important who's in the White House. No question. That'll all take care of itself. You're not paid to do that. There are people being paid to make sure all that works. It'll sort itself out. You don't have to like it, or you could love it. Doesn't matter. But there are people being paid to make sure all that moves in the direction that it's supposed to go, as it has since we founded this country. That'll all take care of itself one way or the other. So while it's important who's in the White House, it's far more important, isn't it, than what's going on in your house. I have friends of mine that are just bent on both sides of the aisle of how this turned out or the way it's going to be, and yet their own lives are being ignored. Fascinating to me. That is the DNA of denial to some degree that humans have been built with. It's this little gene somewhere that somehow blocks off the fact that our lives are far more important than what's going on out there. And when you reverse that and start working from the inside out as opposed to the outside in, things look a little bit better. Keep the faith. Be well. Until next time, safe travels. Adios.